Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Thank you for joining us yet again for episode 3.
Number 3.
Thank you guys for your continued support. This has been amazing. I mean, just two women recording a podcast in a basement.
Yep. Yeah. If you could see what we were working with here, it's...
We should post. I mean, you kind of posted a picture to Instagram.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's cool. It's a makeshift table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fine. It works.
We're sitting on the floor.
Yep.
It's great.
Blankets and it's cold.
It's a wonderful time. But clearly we're doing something kind of right because we actually got interviewed by one of our local news stations, KATV.
Yeah. That was insane.
Yeah, after our first episode. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Maureen Fletcher.
Yes, thank you so much. That was really, really cool.
We should know here in the next, sometime later this week. So by the time this episode comes out, hopefully we'll know, or a few days after this episode comes out, we should know when the story is going to actually air.
Yeah.
And we'll post that stuff to our socials. I would think there's maybe like an internet thing we can share to.
Yeah.
After, like, you don't have, I don't even have cable, so I'm not even sure how I'm gonna watch it.
No, I'm gonna have to watch it, like, can this stream on Hulu next day? How is that working?
I mean, Hulu has live.
They're pretty good. Oh, that's true. That's true. And they're good, though, about, like, posting stuff on their app or website or whatever.
Yeah, I have the KETV app. This is not an ad, by the way, for that. Oh, yeah. We're not being sponsored.
It's not a hashtag ad.
Yeah. You know? We don't have ads yet. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
How that's a thing. We're learning every week as we record, we learn something new.
It's true.
So we're just going with it. So we appreciate that you guys keep coming back and putting up with us through our learning curve.
Hopefully every episode gets a little bit better quality, at least.
I feel like it has been.
I mean, yeah, I think so. I mean, episode 2 came a long way from episode 1.
It did.
We figured out a lot of things. I think we were making it harder than it needed to be.
Yes, we for sure did. And also, let's be honest, we got overly excited instead of being maybe a little smarter about it and practicing recording. We watched YouTube videos and we're like, we totally got this. Let's jump in feet first.
Yeah, when you look back, it's kind of funny. And we probably over ordered like equipment and
I mean, yeah.
But we've kind of mixed like the stuff I got with the stuff you've got. And so
it works.
It's fine. It was all needed.
It was. And I mean, one day, if we somehow get sponsors and ads and we generate revenue from that, we can maybe get better quality.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest also, we didn't buy top of the line.
No.
Because this is a fun thing for us. But we don't have the money to be dropping thousands of dollars on a hobby right off the bat.
No. Yeah, and it is fun. And I mean, I don't think we even expected the amount of people to listen that have listened so
far.
For
sure.
You know? So
that's been really nice. So clearly we're not in this for the money. This is solely about us being able to sit and talk and make other people listen to us. Well, we're not even making people listen to us. We appreciate that you choose to be here and listen to us. Like, this is a conversation. We're all friends here.
Yeah.
We're all friends having a conversation.
Exactly.
And it's a...
Now we get to hang out again, you know?
Yeah. So every Wednesday, it's just some friends hanging out and talking.
About weird... Not weird, but just stuff.
I mean, what some people in society consider a weird subject to be interested in.
I don't know. I mean, some cases hit different, I think, too, than other ones, you know?
Yes.
So this case today that I'm going to be talking about, the more I read it, it almost just made me sick, you know? It was like one of those cases that was really not traumatizing, but it was a harder one for me to read about. And I think they're all so sad for their own reason. Anytime something like, you know, this happens, it's terribly sad, but something about this one was like real hard for me. So I'm excited though to tell you about it because I have a feeling you probably don't even know.
I don't think I know about this. We try not to tell each other too much about the cases we're going to research and share. Some of them I know we're going to be bound to, we'll both just know about it and then we can kind of add stuff in or ask questions about things we've forgotten. But whenever possible, we're kind of just trying to keep the other person in the dark for the most part. So it's like we normally would if we're talking to each other, like, hey, did you hear about this? So yeah, I'm interested to hear what you have to say, but I definitely get what you're saying. Like, some cases, they're all sad, mm-hmm. but there are some things that just, when you're reading it, I don't know, it depends on the situation, mm-hmm. like, where you're at, headspace some totally. Days,
yeah.
too, but, because, like, I found, especially my pregnancy, kids and animals are always harder.
Yes.
No matter what.
Yes.
But I found when I was pregnant with my daughter, I had a hard time even watching, like, How to Get Away with Murder.
Yeah.
Because at the time, one of the characters was also... Yeah, one of the other characters, I remember in the same week, I watched this episode of How to Get Away with Murder, where she was 7 months pregnant, where I was exactly 7 months pregnant.
I remember that.
Yes.
Because we talked about it.
Yes. And she went into early labor, and I freaked out. And then later that week, I went and watched Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes, I remember this because you were like having weird like thoughts.
It was just, I was like, okay, this would have been heavy because I don't think it's giving away. If you haven't seen Murder on the Orient Express, it came out several years ago, so sorry. But it all takes place based off of a child having been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are always sad, but when it's a fictional thing, it usually doesn't hit me as hard.
Yeah.
But that did.
Yeah.
That was rough. And I was like, okay, well, no more murder things for me while I'm pregnant now. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I think it's kind of depends on where you're at in an emotional state, too, when you read up some of these cases.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I mean, are you ready to tell me about it? I'm interested to hear about it.
Yeah, like, for sure. It was one of those cases, too, that the other night, I think I was just overtired and, you know, I was reading about it and I had to make myself put it away because I could keep going and going. And it's like my mind was going all these places and I was thinking about the family and, like, you know, it just took like a weird turn where it felt like a personal thing, which there's no personal connection at all here. But it's one of those things that sometimes those cases just hit you hard, you know? I mean, I think about, you know, any case really that's like a mainstream, like I know we had talked about the other day, the Gabby Petito case, and how anytime, you know, the victim is talked about so much, like you feel a connection to them almost, and you feel like you owe it to them or whatever. And so like this case specifically, I felt like I needed to like almost reach out to the family just to get more info because it felt like I really wanted to like honor the victim in this case because it is such an interesting case, which I'll start telling you about it. Maybe you'll find that connection.
Quick though, but you did reach out to...
I did.
But she probably didn't see because it's Facebook Messenger.
Yep.
So I think that's something to note too for our listeners is just that you did reach out. Mm-hmm. You did try to make that. And if we hear back, if you hear back from her at any point, she's wants to share anything else, we'll definitely mm-hmm. do an update or...
Yeah, for sure. And when I talk about this person specifically later on, I'll kind of get back to why I reached out to her. I mean, you'll grasp more of that kind of as I tell you. But yeah, this case, this family just has been through a lot. I think anyone, I mean, any victims, but...
Yeah.
I wanted to do a case that was from either North or South Dakota, just because those are states you don't really hear about that often. I have family in South Dakota, in Sioux Falls specifically, so I actually had kind of reached out to them too and asked if they had any specific cases that they thought would be good ones to talk about, because I could find lots of different things online, but sometimes it helps when you have the connection to someone else. And the few people I had talked to actually talked about the same case and their personal connection to it. So it made me that much more interested in the case. So we'll start kind of there. This case takes place in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So those of you who don't know, that is the largest city in South Dakota. As of 2020, it said the population is about 180,000. Back when this case happened, which would have been in the early 90s, the population was about, well, not half of that, but it was 102,000. In the 90s. So it's significantly grown.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's all accurate. So we're going to kind of start here. I don't want to even give the criminal. Let's just say the criminal. I don't want to even say his name right now because I don't like him. And I don't think he even deserves that yet. So we're just going to kind of start talking about the victim. So there's a couple victims in this case and it's kind of one of them connects to the other one. So it's going to hopefully kind of make sense as we get going. But we're going to start with Piper Potts. So Piper Potts met her husband Vance Straley at a Bible college in Oregon. And they got married in 1988. So we're back a ways. Once they got married, they moved to Canastora, South Dakota. Not sure if that's how you say that, but it's a small town that's about 20 miles west of Sioux Falls. So being that they had met at a Bible college, they were very involved in their ministry, and they actually were so devoted to that that they had a part-time ministry that they called the Prairie View Bible Camp for Children. So it was something small. I think they just did like a summer camp type thing, and they did it like at their house. I know they lived in a trailer, so it was kind of, they make it sound like it was kind of an open area, and the road that you drive by, you could actually see they had like pews in their yard for when they would do like campfire things.
So they're probably a little bit like
kind of a secluded,
I was gonna say like out in the country-ish maybe. Yeah,
because like Sioux Falls itself is, I mean, a bigger place, and so I think, you know,
they had it on the outskirts of town.
If it's like 20 miles-ish out. So, yeah. So that was like their thing. And they just did that part-time, but they both worked otherwise. So that kind of just gives you an idea on their background of where their hearts were. And so then, okay, 1996, they had two kids. Not that year, but that's in this year.
By 1996.
Yeah. So they had Shayna, who was three, and Nathan, who actually had just turned two on the date that we're about to talk about. So this would have been July 29th of 1996. That's Nathan's birthday. He turns two. This is also the day that their mom is taken from them. So here, they started that day excited because they were going to celebrate Nathan's birthday that night. They had let him open a few gifts the night before, but after they both got home from work that night, they were going to have a little birthday party. So at 6:30 that morning, Vance, who was 29 at the time, he went to work, and he worked at a plumbing job. So he would go do that, and then generally a couple hours after that, Piper would leave the house with the kids, and she would drop them off at the babysitter on her way to work. And she worked in Sioux Falls at Southeastern Children's Center, which I believe is like a daycare.
Okay.
Or something. So when she was getting ready to leave that morning, she called the sitter, and it was at about 9:30, and she said that they were leaving the house and they'd be there shortly. Well, Piper never made it to the sitter's or to work. And also keep in mind, this is back in the 90s, no cell phones, you know?
Right.
So I was like, okay, so she calls from the landline at home as she's leaving and then never gets there. So it's not really like they have a way of calling a cell phone, you know?
Yeah, no way to get a hold of her.
Yeah, and so I think then Vance, so the husband, he calls the house at noon and leaves a message because by then he'd heard that she hadn't come to work. And he said, you know, he left a message on their machine that said, "Honey, where are you?" And that was all he said. Then later at 3 o'clock that day, a coworker of Piper's, her name was Patty Sinclair, they were good friends too outside of work. She called their house to check on her, and Shayna, the little girl who was three, answered the phone, and she answered it by saying, "I don't want mommy to die. I don't want daddy to die. They're probably killed." That's all she said. And very alarmed, Patty, you know, yelled to a coworker, "Call 911, send them over." So she stayed on the phone with Piper, or not Piper, I'm so sorry, with Shayna, the little girl. And she said, "I'm going to stay on the phone with you until the cops get there." And that took about 45 minutes for them to get there. So, you know, I think about it like a three-year-old, and some are way more, I mean, well-spoken than others, you know? And
right.
So it's so hard to know.
But I'm just saying at this point, it's 3:30 in the afternoon.
Uh-huh. I know. And that's why I don't know. I mean, I'm sure, well, everything I read, I couldn't find more information as far as like someone trying to figure out why they were there, or maybe they thought like, you know, things happen sometimes, like, okay, your phone died, which I know there was no cell phone then, but like, you know,
I am kind of surprised, and I know I'm getting ahead probably, but like, no one thought to go out there and check. How, as a husband, I don't know. And maybe it's because I'm a worrier.
I know. See, I don't know either on that, because I thought that too, like, I don't know.
If she didn't show up to work, though, mm-hmm. and you're getting that phone call,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't you be to your boss, "Hey, I have to run home quick."
Yeah.
And make sure, okay, you call, no one answers. Then aren't you like, "Hey, I need to run home quick."
Right.
Which, see, I don't want to, okay, so like, I don't know though.
Yeah.
Because who knows how it is. That's me over things, so I'm not trying to put blame or anything on people.
I think it's just like a normal, well, nowadays, it's like that a lot.
Yes.
Back then, and especially in South Dakota, small town.
True.
You never think something bad's going to happen. However, I think, yeah, like, it does surprise me, but that's another thing that's really hard when you look up old cases, because you don't find those details. Whereas nowadays, people would have it, you know, this time they called here, they checked their phone, you know, and now it's kind of just like, hey, this person called this person, like, you know, like, I know even growing up, when we get home from school, we were supposed to call my mom at work, "Hey, we're home," from the landline, you know, then we'd go outside and play, like, no way to get a hold of us. That was vice versa, you know?
That was the same. We got home from school, we checked in, it was, okay, make sure your homework is done, maybe there were some chores we had to do, mm-hmm. and then you can go play until this time you need to be home.
Yeah. You know, and we didn't think twice about it. I never was fearful, I don't know what my parents thought. I guess, you know, back then it was just such a different time, really.
It was.
So when things like this happened, it's terrifying, but I think...
At this point, though, I'm just thinking of the fact that a 3 and a 2-year-old have been home, potentially right. alone, or I don't know the story, but if their mom's body is in the house or something.
I know. You would think...
I can't imagine the poor children. And I understand at that age, there's a chance of it being, like, hazy memories, especially the 2-year-old.
Yes.
But then my thought is just, like, those poor babies are probably hungry, wet diapers,
scared, don't know what to do.
Yes.
I know. That's like a lot of it. I had all these exact same questions and I tried to find the in-betweens and I couldn't. So, I mean, this is a very...
True. So we don't know. Maybe someone drove by and didn't see your car.
Right. And maybe the things I read was more, it was just more of like...
The basic points, not the tiny little details.
Because it sounded, I don't know. I mean, it sounded like they had a really good relationship and stuff too. So like, to me, it's surprising too that the husband didn't come home. But like I said, I think there has to be more to that part of it.
I think also for me, like, you clearly know who
I know.
Is.
Yeah, that's so
But there's
that's
a part
true.
Of me that's like, the husband always did it.
I know,
I
right?
mean, that's your first thought.
I know. Nowadays. So, yeah.
Okay, so, I threw you off there. I kind of started asking all the questions. Good. Okay, so, they call. They're talking to the little 3-year-old. They're staying on the phone. Peggy? Is that what you said her friend's name
Patty.
Was? Patty.
Patty, yep.
Is staying on the phone with her while they call the cops. It took the cops 45 minutes.
So by the time the cops get there, it's after 5 o'clock. I mean, essentially, because I think they're kind of far out, too. It's not like the police station's, like, super close. And I don't know that they necessarily thought something terrible had happened, that it was, like, a huge rush. You know, because when you have a 3-year-old saying those things, it's like, what? Are you playing? Are you not? I mean...
But if no one's gotten a hold of their parents all day. But then again...
I know. You just don't know. So... Okay, so the cops arrive, and they said that the trailer was just in disarray. The kids were both there, and neither of them were hurt, but Nathan, the 2-year-old, he just would not talk. They did have their dog there with them, and they had a yellow lab. His name was Chase, so he was there, and the kids were kind of with him. So Shayna just kept crying the whole time, saying, "Mommy is going to die." She was very adamant that her mom was not coming back.
Okay, but the mom, she's not there.
Correct. Mom is gone. It's just the 2 kids.
Okay.
So the sheriff and the investigators that were there, they were able to kind of extract the story from her, from what she could describe that happened.
As
and
best
she,
as a 3-year-old can.
Yeah. Her words were that it was a mean man that came and he drove a black car with black wheels. He came inside and grabbed mommy. There was yelling and a gunshot, she said. She said also that mommy had told them to run and hide, and that the mean man had taken Nathan's new blue tent that he had gotten for his birthday the night before.
Aww.
And that was so sad to me, just because I thought, as a child, like, that's traumatic, you know, like, all of it. But I mean, and then specifically mentioning the tent is such a childlike thought, you know, an innocence there that just made me sad, you know, because I thought...
Because those are a child's priorities, they're things. This was... his new toy, his new tent, and this mean person took mommy and his tent.
And that's a weird thing. Like, was he just being mean? I mean, like, hey, look what I'm taking. You know, like, just, there's not a whole lot of mention about that later on. I kind of thought about leaving that out because I was like, this doesn't really have a lot.
But I see why you did, too.
I just thought that was such a thing, like, a sad thing. And it just shows how mean, like, what a hateful thing.
Well, like, was it a full-size tent? Or is it like kids have nowadays with those small tents? Because I remember as a kid having, like, a small play tent, which would have been, I mean, I wasn't 3, but I would have been a child still in 96.
And what's the significance of taking it other than, hey, look what I'm taking. Bye.
And,
you know,
unless,
like, he just...
Like, even if it's a small one, if you're going to use it to, like, wrap the body in, maybe?
I don't know. There's not a whole lot of mention of it later, but I did want to just say that part because I thought that that was significant that that was mentioned, even though there's nothing really with it later.
No, I see what you mean because, like you said, it just points out, like, this is a 3-year-old to sit there and talk about what happened to their mom. And I think that kind of shows that this is a small child who went through this. Like,
it mentions, it just shows that, the vulnerability of, like, a child, you know? Okay, so... That's you know, she's pretty insistent on the fact that her mom's not coming back, which is alarming still.
Did they say, was her car still there?
That was never mentioned. But it, I mean, it would have had to have been.
I mean,
because
if he came in his own vehicle. Yeah,
they never mentioned. Everything I had read, nothing says anything about it. But.
Do you think that would be a key point, though? Her I know, vehicle was there, still but there. She wasn't.
Right, right.
It's like whenever they're like, the purse was there. Yeah. The stuff was there.
Uh-huh. I know. I don't even know. But I mean, I think by this point, too, all the things I had found, it already had talked about the fact that she was taken. So I think that it's like...
So these are like after the fact and after all the information has already come out.
Once again, because it's from the early 90s, it's hard. And so I'm like, I have to remember that when I'm looking up cases. I'm so used to everything being available at our fingertips now, you know? Okay, so Vance, the husband, he gets home and Shane is just crying to him again and, you know, just kept insisting that she was not coming back. And she also cried to him that the tent was gone and he just assured her that they would get another tent, you know, and that just shows once again that was in the forefront of her little mind. Poor little thing, you know, isn't that terrible? And especially because it was her brother's tent, you know, so I think that's
she's
like
probably excited to play with it too.
And I think that just like, shows, I mean, because he probably, you know, was just upset, but he never really talked. So I think
and at two, again, it's just the same as at three. I mean, kids are on varying levels of like, was he much of a talker beforehand or not?
And he had just turned two that day. So he's a very new, I mean.
Yeah.
So how if awful, he is right? talking. For him every year on his birthday. I just think how sad to.
Right.
It's awful. Okay. So then, you know, they're asking the neighbors. I'll kind of not jump ahead. But of course, they ask the neighbors if they had seen anything. There was a couple of neighbors that said that they had seen a nervous young man wearing jeans and a baseball hat walking from that their trailer, Piper's trailer, to a black Ford Bronco that was parked in the driveway. That's about all they really could gather from that time, and there was nothing more substantial than that until later on. So that's kind of what they were working with there. And then, of course, Vance, her husband, you know, at this point, I think, is probably just completely, I mean, in shock and trying to figure, you know,
things out. Well, I'm sure he's being questioned at this point, too.
And he, you know, is racking his brain, and he remembers that they had a visitor come 3 days earlier. And I don't think it necessarily seemed like that much of a weird thing because they do have that camp there.
Right.
And so he said that this guy had come by 3 days before. He was chubby and balding. He was a stranger, like they had never met this man before, and he looked like he was about in his mid-20s. He remembered him having a very limp handshake. He said it was odd, though, because he came at 7:30 in the morning, and when Vance answered the door, he said the man seemed kind of surprised that Vance was there. And he said that he had been driving by their house for months just on the road that goes by, which that just alone sounds creepy. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying, but also maybe don't say it that way.
Yeah.
So, that he'd been driving by for months and he was interested in enrolling his children in their Bible camp. So
I think maybe I have heard this story before. It sounds vaguely familiar. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that clicked a little bit. Like, I don't remember details, but that sounds familiar.
See, I had read that part too initially, and then when I had spoken with my family about it, they had told me, and I was like, that's that case. Because, like, I never read in depth, but...
Yeah, okay, sorry.
So, no, you're good. So he wanted to enroll his kids in their camp, and so Vance said, you'll have to talk to Piper. She's kind of in charge of all that. So she comes to the door and, you know, says that they actually weren't enrolling at that time because they were done for that year. Because this was like the end of the summer, you know. And so she said that they put him on the wait list for the next year. And he left his name and phone number and was gone. So after sharing that with the police, Vance able to kind of recall what he could of that. They were able to identify the man as Robert Leroy Anderson. So I'm just going to refer to him as Anderson because there's a lot of other names and that's just easier to remember there. So he was 26. He was a high school dropout. He had been married twice. He was a father of four and he lived in Sioux Falls and he worked as a maintenance man at a meat packing plant that was called John Morrell or Morrell. I'm not quite sure.
I'd say Morrell.
Morrell. That's what I thought, but I apologize too if I'm not saying that right. So meat packing plant there. And he worked the night shift. So he would work 11 PM until 7:30 in the morning. So that's important to remember that. So after they identify him, they're not even sure, you know, if this is the same guy, because when they go to talk to him, he voluntarily goes with them to the police station. And at that time, they also took his Bronco. So, you know, witnesses had seen a Bronco in the driveway, but right. It was black. So his Bronco is blue. So, okay. But could be a slight
miss. Well, if it's dark enough blue, because the car I just got in the right lighting, it's blue, but in the right lighting, it looks black.
Yeah. So, like, okay, that's close enough that...
Right.
So they take it and they're going to look through it. So he goes to the police station. They start looking through his Bronco and they do notice some odd things. So beneath the carpeting in the back, there's a plywood platform with holes that are drilled. And they appeared to be designed to accommodate wrist and ankle restraints. There was also a toolbox containing chains and wooden dowels. They found a small container of black water-based paint and partial rolls of duct tape. They didn't find anything significant connected, I guess, to Piper other than some dog hairs matched her dogs. That's why that dog is, I mean, there's that connection there. So that's what they find in his car. Meanwhile, they're interrogating him. He stays calm the whole time. He denies any knowledge of anything that had to do with Piper, but he did admit to visiting the house a few days prior, and then he did remember suddenly that he had gone back on the 29th because he wanted to use their archery range at their house. But he said that when he knocked, there was no answer, and he heard that the kids were inside, like, playing. So he just assumed that the mom was napping, and he left.
Wait, so he put himself there the mm-hmm. day of her disappearance. Mm-hmm.
And my guess is they said, hey, someone saw someone like you at the house. Was that you? And the way I read it was he says, oh, yeah, I was there. That was me. But I was just going because I wanted to play archery. Okay, he doesn't know them. So why would he randomly go to use their archery range? And also, that's a weird thing to remember after the fact. And why were you there at, like...
Yeah, that early in the morning. Why would you assume someone would be there?
Mm-hmm. And why would the mom be napping in the morning? I mean, okay, I love a good nap at any time. But when you have young children, we all know that is not... You don't nap at 9:30 in the morning.
No. I guess it depends on your shift of work.
That's true. But, I mean, she's a daycare worker.
Yeah. I don't know. Putting yourself there. And I get... I don't know. It still, to me, seems like it would make more sense if they didn't have a plate to still deny.
I know.
Because now you have
now put you've yourself. Placed yourself there. Yep. And I think he thought he had gotten away with any connection.
I mean, sometimes that's just it. They get cocky. Well,
he's a high school dropout, which whatever. But like, from reading the back history of him, it sounds like he's probably not the smartest guy. You know? Like,
yeah.
Which, I don't know. I think a lot of times, too, they get stuck in their own lies and stories and they forget what they've said and
that's
haven't
true
said.
Too.
So that was his story. He said that's why he was seen there, but he had left. So they continue to interrogate him, and they said that several diverse topics came up while they were talking to him. Stuff like his childhood speech impediment. So they talked about that and how he had gotten bullied for that growing up. So then they also talked about his interest in anal sex.
Oh.
And yeah. He mentioned that his wife did not share that interest with him.
How does that just come up in conversation with police?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, officer, so let me it's talk kind about of all my like, favorite positions.
Yeah, right. No thanks, right?
Yeah.
And I think that was odd, too, and it's kind of shows mindset. I mean, you'll see as things
get
further along why it's kind of significant that he did talk about that.
It just seems like what person who's not... I don't know.
Yeah. There's how does so that just randomly get...
Yeah.
I know. I was like, oh, when they say diverse topics, like, yeah, okay. You know?
I don't get how that comes up in
being bullied to that. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, to each their own. But, okay. So they talk about that, but then they also talk to him a little bit about the disappearance of a local missing woman. 2 years prior, a woman had gone missing. Her name was Larissa Demonsky. I'm so sorry. That's a very...
Dumonsky?
Yeah, that's
Dumonsky looks right.
Okay. So, 2 years before this, she had gone missing. She was only 29 years old. The connection here is she was also an employee at the same meatpacking company that Anderson worked at. So, she disappeared 2 years ago from the parking lot there, and there was nothing to go off of. So they bring that up when they find out that that's where he works, and he denies any involvement with that case. So, you know, it kind of starts bringing things a little bit more together. It's a little fishy.
I'm assuming they didn't have, like, any sort of security footage on their parking lot. Because I know 96, but there was still security footage then.
Yeah, it was. And they didn't say at that point what time it was that she went. They just said, like, night. So it could be dark, you know. And
I'm wondering if she was, like, a second shift or if she worked the same shift he did.
We'll find out.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
My bad.
So this kind of jumps around a little bit just based off the timeline. So they just talk about that a little bit there. We'll come back to her more later. So meanwhile, the police are also searching his trailer because he lives in a trailer as well. And they found his jeans that were in with the dirty laundry. There was a blood stain and a semen stain. They had such a small specimen to test that the test later came back inconclusive.
Ugh.
So they wanted it to be Piper's blood so they could tie him to it, but they just didn't have enough, but they still believed that it was her blood. So then they also found handcuff keys and another container of the black water soluble paint. It was the same paint they had found in the Bronco. So they also talked to his neighbors, you know, so they talked to Piper's neighbors around hers, and now they're talking to his neighbors. So his neighbors said that they did see him cleaning out the interior of his blue Bronco early on the morning of July 29th, that is the same day that Piper went missing, then he left. They saw him later that afternoon arrive home around 2 p.m., and he was seen cleaning the interior again. So Anderson denies the claims of cleaning his car. He said that that is not true, but he does know why they found the handcuff keys that they had mentioned earlier. Those were his. But he never had handcuffs to go with him. He just had the keys. So that's kind of his excuse for the things that are thrown at him there.
Why would you just have handcuff keys and not
Don't they come together?
Yeah, unless you randomly found them.
Which then, why would you keep them if they're no good to
why use? Have them?
I mean, right.
And if you've already talked about your love of anal sex, like, just admit your kinks.
Yeah.
It's okay if you enjoy some handcuff play, but
right, like, okay. I don't know. So it's a lot of weird things and a lot of different pieces of evidence and a lot of he says, she says. So it's kind of like, well, you know, you can't.
It's a lot of circumstantial, but nothing concrete.
So they decide to do a lineup. And so they have six people. And when they had the lineup, Vance, Piper's husband, was able to pick him out as the man who came to visit and inquire about their camp. They later had his daughter, Shayna, do the lineup, and she was also able to identify him as the mean man who took her mom.
Oh.
So that was really sad. After they were able to identify him from the lineup.
From a three-year-old identifying him. How heartbreaking.
Isn't that awful? And then all the information that they had been able to collect, they did arrest him on August 2nd at 1:30 in the morning, and they charged him with kidnapping. They couldn't charge him for anything more than that yet. Because Piper was still missing, and they didn't have enough
evidence that proof
that
she
was even dead. Yeah. So they continued searching near and around the home of Piper and around his home, and they found nothing substantial. So the case finally takes a turn after botanist Gary Larson from South Dakota State University was able to identify a bit of vegetable matter that was on his toolbox that was found in the Bronco.
Yeah.
So it was, and I'll probably say this wrong too, hoonwort and black snake root.
That sounds right.
Okay. So this grows along wooded stretches of the Big Sioux River.
Okay.
So that gives them a direction to go. So that's north of Sioux Falls, and it's near a small town called Baltic. That, you know, places him there. So also on the 29th, a motorist had found half of a torn black and white t-shirt on the road. Didn't think much of it until he had seen that someone was missing, and he turned that in, and they were able to confirm that that was the shirt that Piper had worn the day that she went missing. So this tied her to that specific location, so they were able to go there and look, and that placed Anderson there obviously as well. So they knew that he had taken her to that area. While they were there searching, they found the other half of the shirt under a small tree On the branches above the tree, there were pieces of duct tape of different lengths hanging from the tree. They were wadded up together and they were matted with human hair that did indeed match Piper's. And the duct tape also matched the duct tape from the Bronco. So they knew that they could connect into that. Near that, they also found a large dildo and a half-melted wax candle that they believed he used to torture her. And they said that this just gives clear evidence of him being a sexual sadist. So
how do you, first of all, you're going through the trouble of cleaning your Bronco
right.
twice in one day. Even if you don't think anyone is going to, like, find her in that location, how are you just going to leave a dildo laying around?
Right. I mean, half of that stuff, it's like,
you can clean that.
Right. And if it's eventually, did you think there was nothing that was going to tie you to that location?
Yeah.
And it sounds like he had enough time Clearly. During the day that if he's going to go to all that extra trouble. I don't know. So that is what they found. So they also, I mean, they had enough to really tie him down for kidnapping still. They never did find her body. And to this day, I mean, we'll touch on that more later, but I do just want to say that they did never find her body.
Ugh.
So I think that's just heartbreaking too. I think just for closure. I mean, even if you know it happened, it's like you want to be able to bury them and, you know.
Right. You don't want to think about your loved one just
being out there somewhere.
Tossed in the forest somewhere.
So that was pretty awful. And so he does go to trial though for kidnapping. And another thing too that was big there, they were able to show that he had bought that black paint and he sprayed it on his blue Bronco and changed the appearance because it was like the kind of paint that just
you
washed
could
off.
Wash off
so that's where that comes in, like, if you're okay. gonna once again go to all that trouble to do that.
Okay, because I was gonna ask because it didn't click for me. I was like, what does the black water soluble
yeah I know I
have to do with
I
anything?
Thought that was weird too, because then I had read that it was blue and I was like, wait, but they said it was black.
That one, I was like, okay, you keep talking about black water-soluble paint. What? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What does that have to do with anything?
So makes sense. He took now. The time to paint his Bronco and clean it out. Not that great, really. And
I mean,
but it was so messy at the actual crime scene.
Yeah, that's what doesn't make sense. Like, that's what's weird to me is usually you have someone who's just sloppy all the way through or meticulous all
right.
the way through, and maybe there's one small thing they missed.
Right. It's almost like he took so much time planning the actual execution of taking her.
That he didn't plan. But he had to have planned what he was going to do with her afterwards to an extent, too. Because if she's never been found.
I know. Which, there's a little bit more about that later, what they
think happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, that just shows you what kind of person he is.
Yeah.
Horrible. So, they also, so that was a big thing that they were able to use at the trial to really show that he had done this. They also were able to kind of reconstruct the events that took place based off Shayna, the daughter's,
yeah.
you know, recollection.
Testimony.
And yeah. So they said that Anderson had driven to Piper's trailer on the 29th. He handcuffed Piper. He took the note with his name and number on it, which I thought that was crazy too, because when they mentioned that earlier that he wrote his name down, I thought, well, that was really stupid. Why
right.
would you do that? And that's probably why, though, the husband didn't know his name off the bat, because he didn't know. So my
right.
guess is he said, give me that. Or it was maybe still just laying out because it had only been a couple days.
Well, or, I mean, if your children, if you're trying to protect your children.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in your house demanding this, you're going to give that to
yeah.
him to protect your children.
Yeah.
If you think that it's going to protect
yes.
them and maybe this will get him out of there or something,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
I could see.
Yeah. So that. So he takes that. He carries her out to the Bronco, drives her to Baltic, which is that small town. He secures her to the platform of the vehicle, and he gagged her with duct tape. He cut her shirt open with a folding knife. He sexually assaults her, kills her, and disposes of her body. So then they think that he returns back to Piper's trailer. And this is another thing that I keep thinking, whoa, what were the kids doing? But I think, you know, if you told your kid to go and hide, and they're probably so traumatized, they probably would stay hidden. So maybe they didn't even, I don't know, they didn't do anything. They don't mention what they were doing at the time, but he does go back and he gets his watch because he had dropped his watch during the struggle. And he picks up the expended shell casing from the round that he fired, which Shayna did say in the beginning that he fired a gun.
Right.
And, but then there was never, they weren't able to find that until later. So it's interesting, like, she was right.
So how do they know he dropped his watch in the struggle? Like, did he admit this?
I don't know. That's, I read that on three different places, and they never said if he admitted that or what. So I hate to say, like, this is exactly what happened, because right, that's what no. I read, but I don't know. But they, whoever could, connect that, they were able to say, you know, that
there has to be a reason. If they were like, we think he went back and yeah. dropped his watch, they have to have a reason as to why they think that, or he said it or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be why the neighbors saw him later, because they said that when he came back, yeah, the second trip there was when the neighbors saw him walking from the trailer to the Bronco, and they said they saw a nervous guy. It was before 2 o'clock. So that would have been in the afternoon.
Right.
And then at 2 o'clock, when his own neighbors saw him return home, the Bronco was blue, which means in between those times, he went and washed his Bronco and washed the paint off. So
even that point, he planned the aftermath of it a yeah. little bit to be like, I can't drive home with this and wash it off at my own place. Mm-hmm. I have to go wash this somewhere else. But even that would seem weird, to take it through a car wash or take it through a gas station. Wouldn't people notice you driving by, like,
right. Why did you paint that with some... And, like, you can't tell me that it's that good enough of a paint job, too, that, like, it doesn't look like a very flat paint or something. I'm just thinking of...
And when I guess, like, the small town I grew up in, I don't know how your small town was, we had technically an area where you could go wash your cars. Well, like, one of those bay things with the hoses. Oh,
yeah. You just, like, do it yourself. Like, yes. A self-serve type thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, but then again, I guess depending if it's a smaller area, well, if he did it in Baltic, if it's a small town and people are busy, but then again, also small towns, people are nosy and they see all the things. I don't know. It seems weird. It seems like there would be someone out there being like, yeah, I remember seeing a guy washing his car and it going from black to blue. Right. And then wouldn't it leave paint stains on the ground where it was at?
You would think.
I'm probably overanalyzing to an extent.
I don't know. I think all the same things as you. And then I did read something... when I was kind of at the end of all this, where they had spoken to Piper's parents, actually, because I was going to talk about this at the end, but it's kind of a good time now, where they specifically talked about that they hope that this brought awareness to people, because they never once thought their daughter was unsafe in this tiny South Dakota town.
Right.
And how people just need to be so aware of their surroundings. And I thought, that is so true. You kind of think, you know, once again, you're in the heartland and it's like a safe area, but then stuff like this happens and it's just like hard to even fathom, because you don't think. But I think now, because of these kind of things and more awareness, it makes it easier to notice details. Like, if I see something, like anything suspect at all, I'm immediately in my mind like, I need the license plate, I know the kind of car, the color, you know. But like, yeah. I think it's just because we're more aware of it, and back then it wasn't really as much of a thing, or you just didn't hear about them as much. And so I don't think people necessarily like had their guards up all the time.
No, know? I also think part of that comes with the territory of reading and watching so much yes. true crime, is that you're inherently slightly more paranoid than the quote-unquote average person.
Yeah, I can think of times, even my mom, for example, I'm sure she'll love me sharing this. I don't know why this example just sticks out in my mind, but she had come to visit for something, and we had gone in the gas station, or I think just to get like a soda, and she had like, I think she had like her wallet or something. She's kind of set it by the machine and she's filling it. And I was like, Mom, what are you doing? You know, she's like, what? Like, and there were some other guys in there. I couldn't tell you why I felt more unsafe with them, but you know, sometimes you just get that feeling where I'm like, I don't really feel super safe right now. Not that anything would happen, but like, you just automatically have your guard up.
Listen, my thing is, if I'm alone, or it's me and my sister, or just me and another woman, and there's more than one male in an area where we could easily be snapped, I'm already, listen, you might be the nicest guy ever.
Yeah. But it's sketchy, because you just don't know.
I have to, like, I don't care how nice you are.
Right.
Well, and that's the sad thing with how being a woman, about one of those things about being a woman is, like, you unfortunately have to.
I know.
Like, think about and worry about those things. And so, yeah, I already get uncomfortable if I'm a woman alone. Yeah. I had someone once approach me in Target. I was by myself. I was there. It was one of the rare moments of being out of the house by myself with no children.
So and I remember it being, yeah. It's like a mom's dream, Target,
yourself. Alone. Thank
and
you.
With a Starbucks when you're really getting fancy.
I probably had one. I remember specifically I was wearing a tank top because it was summer. Because this guy randomly approached me. And I'm in the book section. First of all, if you see me with a book, don't talk to me.
Right. Right.
Don't talk to
me. Yeah. Clearly, I'm not interested in chatting.
I'm busy. Like I said, I was wearing a tank top, and this guy comes up to me. And now, mind you, I have a full sleeve. I'm now currently working on my other sleeve. So I have tattoos. I'm a tattooed woman. And he comes up to me and is like, oh, those are some really cool tattoos, Anna. Also, the sleeve at this point is books. It's all about books. Don't talk to me. And I don't know, like, he was a younger guy, and it just... I don't know if he was just trying to be flirty or what. It was really awkward and stilted. He asked me something about modeling, and I was like, dude.
Okay.
So, I don't know. But then I mentioned being married and having children. Mm-hmm. I think it was just Devlin having a child, and it was instant, like...
Oh, but did he just walk away?
Yeah. Then he was like, oh, well, that's cool. Have a nice night. But it was, like, it was so awkward. I'm like, dude, why are you talking to me right now? What is your thought? And, like...
Bold, you know? He's confident.
He was kind of scrawny looking, so, like, maybe I could have taken him. That's so funny. But it's just one of those things, like, anytime I'm by myself...
Yeah.
And I
know.
I just don't like it. Nope. I don't want to be approached.
No.
And I thought I had good enough RBF.
Yeah, like,
apparently not.
Work on it.
I mean, the people at the mall and side aisles don't talk to me. I've got it good enough for that, but maybe I've worked on it since then. I don't know.
I mean, I can even have, like, my AirPods in and people will not read the signs. I mean, not, like, in a creepy way.
No, yeah.
But just in general.
I think sometimes in general, people nowadays are, like, don't pick up on social cues.
No. If I'm not looking at you,
I don't
want to talk.
If I don't make eye contact with you, do not talk to me.
Yeah, for real.
But... So, I mean, but I kind of got off track, but it's just, like you were saying, like, just being in the small town, I think it's easy, you take for granted that you can just set your wallet down. Right. I mean, in a small town, nowadays, I think people are getting better, but especially, like, when you were young and your mom was there and stuff,
well,
you could set your wallet down on the counter and walk away.
Yeah, totally. And even then, I know the wallet was part of it, but there was something where I was like, Mom, don't go over there by yourself. Like, I just felt like... Bless her heart. Not that she's, like, not street smart. But you know what I mean? Like, once again, growing up in a small town, you just kind of think, like, it's fine. And maybe I'm way too much, too paranoid, you know? Like, whoa, don't go over there, that guy. You know, I just think of all the things that can happen very quickly. So, I don't know. Maybe when we are into true crime more, like you said, I think he was overly paranoid, maybe.
I'd rather be overly paranoid than dead.
I mean, exactly.
I mean...
It's very, very true.
I don't like people to begin with anyways.
I'm not.
So it all works out.
I'm very, I'm a extroverted introvert, I think, because...
I'm just straight up introvert.
Yeah.
Don't talk to
me. It's funny because sometimes the other day someone said, I bet you can just sit down and talk to anybody. And I said, really? She's like, yeah, you just seem like a very, like, friendly, bubbly person. I was like, oh, no, friend. I was like... I like to be in my house and not talk to anybody, actually.
I don't think bubbly is an adjective I would ever use for you.
Thank you, Cassie. I don't know if that's a compliment or... Yeah, nah.
But I mean...
You know me, though. Like,
right. Yeah. I would never use bubbly for me either. No. I'm not bubbly. But that's something, too, because, like, being a massage therapist, there's something about talking to strangers when they're lying naked on your massage
very
table.
True.
Where I feel like, okay, I'm on equal footing now. It's not so awkward.
Yeah.
So I can talk to people in a massage setting.
About anything, which is weird, too. Because
I can make small talk that way. I cannot make small talk for the life. If I go to a party, which doesn't happen. But let's say I go to a party.
Right.
On the rare occasion, I only know, like, the person throwing it or, like, one or two other people. I can't just go up and start talking to people and making random conversation. I'm just like, so, do you like true crime?
Like, I can, but I think it's awkward and I don't. Want to. I feel very socially drained after something like that.
Oh, I'm so quiet.
It's just too much
in a new
me.
Situation like that.
Yeah.
And then, nope, I don't like it.
I know.
So, because I had someone the other day mention something about me being a good conversationalist or something.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, that's because I met you via you being a client, and now I can have all these great conversations with you because now I've gotten to know you and it's fine and I'm comfortable with you. But before it was just because it was a different setting. Right. Like, it,
I know. And I remember when I was still doing massage, that's how we know each other. I could have some of the deepest conversations with clients, and then it was so weird because then you're like, okay, I'm going to step out now and I'll meet you out there. You know, then they come out and it's like, oh, now you're a different person to me again. Like, you're fully dressed.
Now I don't know what to say to you.
Yeah, and it's always that awkward, make sure you make it, drink enough water.
Make sure you drink plenty of water.
The classic,
and make sure you drink twice the amount of water you normally drink. Flush out all those toxins.
Yeah, eat your water.
Eat your water?
I like that, yes. Have you not heard that?
No.
Oh, I would always hear people say, make sure you eat your water.
That, I can't do that. That annoys me. I don't like it.
No. I never actually said that personally, but I said it now because I've
heard people say
it.
And
now it just sounded, it felt as awkward as it sounded.
I was like, oh, you messed up with what you were saying. Yeah.
No, it's okay. You don't have to edit that out because that's actually what
I'm saying. No, I'm not going to.
So for everyone, that's what I say to you. You know?
But, okay, so we got way off track. Wow. So her parents wanted the small town. To people to realize that small towns aren't as safe. Yes. Sorry, guys. We kind of got off on a long tangent there.
Now you know more about us than you don't need to know. But yeah, that gives us, I guess, a little background on the weirdness of us. Okay. So this is in court. So after all of that has happened, they find him guilty. This was on May 8th of 97. They find him guilty of kidnapping. Because that's all they could charge him
time. Even with the evidence they found, they couldn't charge him with...
Which I think it was maybe different in the 90s too. Because now I know they can charge someone. Yeah. So they sentenced him to life though for this. So once again, I wanted to go down the rabbit hole and look. I didn't because I didn't think that necessarily mattered in this specific case because there's more that goes into it later. However, I don't know that now... You could do that.
My thing is like people will be convicted of rape and get 6 months.
I know.
But kidnapping, you're going to, I'm not saying.
I don't know if it's like part of it's because they never found her. Like he kidnapped her, but it's not like they got her back. You know what I mean? Like, but well, I feel like that's something different though.
Yeah.
I don't know. So everybody was upset with that because they wanted to get him for, you know, murder. More. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they were happy that they were at least able to keep him locked up. Before he was sentenced, though, he did say to the state prosecutor, I hope you rot in hell. And the state prosecutor, I just like this, so I had to add this in here. He said, I might, but it won't be because I convicted Robert Anderson.
Nice.
So I know. I was like, yes. So they were, I thought that was good. Everyone was upset. Like I said, they wanted, but they thought, you know, there's still hope. So he started serving his sentence at South Dakota State Penitentiary. And then we're going to fast forward here a little bit. So he's serving time for the kidnapping. Down the road, Anderson's longtime friend, Jamie Hammer, I believe that's how you would say Hammer, just that's the way it's spelled, it sounds. He brought forward evidence to support that Anderson was a sexual sadist and evidence of just him being a predator. So this also proved that he most likely would have continued preying on women in doing this had he not been stopped.
Right.
So Hammer said that he knew Anderson back in high school. And in high school, Anderson was obsessed with like torture and murdering women. They talked about it all the time. Hammer himself said he was intrigued by this as well. And they would discuss how they could commit the perfect crime together. And at one point they finally decided to act on this desire. So they got wheel poppers, you know, they'd put them out on the road. Right. So it would, you know, they'd get a flat tire and they'd have to pull over. And when the victim would get out of the car, they planned that they would attack. So at this point, Anderson had already pre-selected a victim and her name was Amy Anderson, no relation to Robert Anderson. She was 26. So in November of 1994, Amy was driving home from a friend's house near T, South Dakota, where I have family that lives. So I'm like, it's kind of crazy. And she ran over these poppers. She pulls over like anyone would, pops her trunk to get her spare out. And at this time, Anderson grabs her from behind, carries her to a wooded area. She must have fought like hell because she was able to break free and she ran out to the road, flagged a car down, and got out of there. They never were able to connect him to this crime and she had no idea who it was. And it just remained unsolved for 2 years. So when Anderson was on trial for the kidnapping of Piper. This case got brought back up because Amy's case was semi-familiar and they had never caught the guy who had done it. So when this comes to the forefront, they decide to have Amy look at the lineup too when they do the lineup, and they have her pick out Anderson from the lineup. She remembered him, and based off the stuff that his friend Hammer had said, the last name Hammer, it was fair that it was him. He didn't face any charges because he was already prosecuted for the kidnapping charge of Piper, but they were able to say that he had done this. But
so what about Hammer? Was he with him? Because they planned this together.
Yeah, so he gets in trouble for this.
I would hope so.
I think later, because, well, he brings this information forward. So there's another friend here, too, that gets involved. So then during all of this, it's discovered that another friend of Anderson's, so this guy's name is Glenn Marcus Walker. So we have Hammer. They don't really talk a lot about him other than him bringing kind of forth that information. When I get down here further, I'll have to see if I can remember what that one was here. But so this guy, Walker, he was also involved with the attack of Amy. And he's the one that actually took the fall for it, though. So it was discovered that Anderson and Walker also committed another crime prior to Amy. So, okay. I know it's like a lot of...
Yeah.
It reminds me of the crime from last week that, like, there were so many different crimes within yes. this one. So, Hammer, they don't talk about him too much. I don't know that he got charged with anything. It was more about the fact that he just brought that information forward and they were able to tie Anderson to Amy. So then with that, the other one that gets brought up is Walker.
Right.
So we have all these different names. So Walker goes back even further, I think, than him and Hammer.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that tracking?
So Walker was already probably a predator.
Yes.
Who had gone past the fantasy stage.
Yes.
And into actually committing ish things.
Yes. So once they find out he was involved in this Amy thing too, more information just leaks out. And you find out that Walker and Anderson had committed a crime before Amy. So there was a crime, then Amy, then Piper, essentially.
Okay.
So that brings us back to Larissa that we had talked about earlier.
Right, from the meatpacking plant.
Yes. So this goes back to 1991. Larissa and her husband, Bill, had moved to South Dakota from Ukraine, and they were both very eager to start a new life here, and they both actually got jobs working at that meatpacking plant together. So they worked there together for a while. Eventually, Bill found another job, but Larissa stayed working the night shift there, because I know we had talked about that earlier. While she worked there, she befriended the maintenance man, who happened to be Anderson. Like with Hammer, Anderson confided with Walker about his fantasies, his desires, and Walker had the same common interest. I'm like, this is, first of all, kind of alarming. I'm like, how many people have these...
Well, the
creepy
thing,
interest
being,
too.
Being a sexual sadist in and of itself,
yeah.
Like, you have the BDSM community,
yes.
So that's fine. But there, you have communities,
so you
then,
don't act out.
So
on, yes,
but
this
is more than just being a sexual sadist. Like,
yes.
this goes beyond that.
Yes, totally.
That, like, he didn't want to just pretend.
Yeah, no, he wanted to
fulfill.
Mm-hmm. So, him and Walker have this interest. So, once again, now they decide that they want to act out on this. So they plan to kidnap Larissa because Anderson had really actually, you know, been stalking her for months because he worked with her. He knew
oh,
her shift.
Easy to
he
do
knew,
at
yeah,
that point.
Her whereabouts and all that. So once again, he has this, you know, well, not once again, I guess, because this is technically before Amy. So this is where the initial idea came in. The wheel poppers. So they actually tried that several times, and she would drive over them and get flat tires, but she was smart and didn't pull over in an isolated area.
Oh, so she'd always pull over somewhere.
Somewhere, like, yeah, where she wasn't.
Well, and that's nice if you can do that, because I'm assuming the meatpacking plant has to be somewhat close in town. Like, it might still be on the outskirts, but close enough that,
like
she's like, okay, I don't have to, I can drive a little ways on this. Whereas Amy, if they're kind of out in the country a little bit or something.
Because it's a little jaunt.
Yeah, you have no choice. there is, you don't know how far you're going to be driving then at that point.
Well, and now I guess we have cell phones, but I'm like, I don't even know how to change a tire. I would have to YouTube it or Google it or call my dad. And,
I have a general understanding of how to change a tire, but I don't know where to place the jack.
Yeah. I think I could figure it out if given, like, if I had nothing else to go off of, but once again, we also have, like, AAA and, you know,
right. All those things. I have roadside assistance with my car insurance.
Same. So I would never have to worry about that. But, okay, so, sorry, off track here a little bit.
But so she was able to go to, like, maybe a gas station or something well lit instead of pulling off into a dark, secluded spot. Right,
so she was, she was smarter about that, obviously. So she... That happened several times. It didn't say how many. I don't know how many several is to them. Is that 3? Is that 10? I don't know. So
I don't know. Either way, like, more than maybe twice. Right.
You think, and if, like, her, and there's you'd not be like, that's in your, sus.
Yeah. Because, like, my car I had, like, I swear the Jeep I had, my Cherokee I had before, my Subaru, I don't know what it was, but it was like a nail magnet. I would get nails all in that thing all the time. But, like, not... But then the nails were still there, and I got it. Like, I understood. I'm like, hey, and I wasn't getting an instant flat.
Right. So, like...
That seems weird. I don't know. But that's...
I know. And I thought, how many times would you really try that?
I don't
know. So, I mean, maybe some of these sources weren't clear, and they just summed it up, but...
I'm also wondering, like, to the extent, like... Because then, like, when I think of these things, I think of those strips that... Which I know is probably not a full strip, but I think of, like, the police use.
Oh, yeah. I know. Because you'd have to have something long enough. You don't know exactly where the wheels are going to hit. Yeah.
Then aren't you wondering how it's more than four of your tires?
And how do you know someone else isn't going to drive over it too? And you're not going to have 10 people pulled over with flat tires and all of them thinking that's a little weird, you know?
I don't know. I feel like they...
There's a lot. I mean, we could really go down that road too.
Okay.
So, okay. That plan fails. So... He ends up, Anderson approaches her in the parking lot at the meatpacking plant, and he held her at knife point. He ordered her into his vehicle, and then Anderson and Walker, they were both in the car then, they drove her to Lake Vermilion. So,
I think I watched an episode of something on this, probably on the IDTV.
Oh, that channel's so good. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Walker... So they put her in the car and they take her to Vermilion.
Yes. So then Walker says that he watched Anderson drag her out of the car and he raped her several times. She pleaded desperately for her life, but Anderson ignored her. Walker gave testimony several years later, and he had said that Anderson suffocated her with duct tape and that he buried her under a choke cherry bush. They were able to confirm that she was 6 weeks pregnant at the time. I know. So sad.
Did they ever find her body?
We'll get there.
Okay, sorry.
Nope, you're good, but I know. you're asking all the things. I know, like the normal things. So after the Piper conviction, Walker decided to confess to being an accomplice to Larissa. So I think at this point, too, you know, he knows that he can probably... Get a plea less, deal. Yeah, lesser sentence.
Well, especially
that,
if he's like, I can give you information. He's not going to put it on himself. Yeah. I was just there.
So, yeah, exactly. And so he's able to do that. So he did tell them that they had planned and carried out the crime together, but Walker said that he was not involved in the rape or murder. He also said that he could show the police where she was buried.
Okay.
So that's, I think, kind of what got him that lesser sentence, too. And, I mean, honestly, at this point, too... That's awful to not know where your child is, your wife, your sister. You know what I mean? Like, because this had been 2 years then, because it was still unsolved by the time Piper was missing.
Right.
So he was able to lead them to the shallow, unmarked grave at Lake Vermilion. When they dug up her body, only portions of her skeleton were found. So overall, they found 57 items that were related to Larissa. They were able to find a tooth, a rib, bones from both wrists, fingers, right foot and ankle, fingernails, jaw and throat bones. So near the grave, they also found work gloves, a shell casing, bullets, her shoes, part of her belt, jewelry, and pieces of clothing. They were confused, though, why only some of her bones were found, because they said that the grave was very smooth and it was not disturbed by animals.
Oh, because that was going to be my first thought. Like, if it was a shallow grave. Mm-hmm. But then again, if it's been 2 years, I don't know. Weather and stuff, snow and all that, like, right. could have made the earth smooth again.
We'll find out. There's more. Oh, okay. We find out. But no, before that, but I think the same thing. It would be weird. Like, I would probably just chalk it up to, like, yeah, it's been animals, a long time.
And then, yeah.
But the fact that nothing was dug up really and stuff is weird. Yeah. I also find it, I guess maybe not weird, but for 2 years, you're saying that nobody walked that area and found any of those items?
Right, because if it was a shallow grave, again, a squirrel digging for a nut or something.
Right, would find something. Well, and if they found shoes and all that, like, if I was a hiker or something, a hiker, that's funny. That's funny in itself. But I feel like if I found anything like that, I would find that a little bit weird, especially knowing that there's this missing persons case, because, like, I don't know. But I guess I don't know how far out that lake is. So.
Yeah, from where she would have been missing. Because the thing is like, people lose jewelry or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. That's so weird, though.
I know. So, we'll get to this. So then, okay, so that's that. They are able to find her. So that's, gives some closure on that. So they still were kind of puzzled as to why only some parts of her were there. But later down the road, I notice I say that phrase a lot, but I mean, it's down the road, you know, where it doesn't give me a specific time frame, but I know it was later on.
Sometime later.
Yes. Anderson had a cellmate only for like a week, but this guy's name was Jeremy Brunner. So this guy shared a cell with him for 1 week, but he did contact law enforcement about Anderson. So he said that the short time that they shared a cell together, Anderson had bragged excessively and in vivid detail about Piper and Larissa. He said that Anderson even bragged about being a serial killer and that he had kept trophies. Thank you. Yep. Trophies of his victims at his grandmother's house. He even said like the precise location of where these items were at. And he was right, because later when they searched, they did find them right where they were told. So they were tucked between the ceiling and the wall of his grandmother's basement.
Jeez.
Bizarre, right? They were able to find a ring and a necklace that belonged to each of the women. And they found a gun that belonged to Anderson there as well. So Anderson also had told Brunner that he was worried that Walker, the guy involved,
right.
He was worried that he might tell the authorities about the murders because he had witnessed. And he said that he had a feeling he would tell them about the real location of Larissa's body. And he didn't want them to be able to find her and identify her. So he said in order to prevent that, he ended up going and removing her skull and teeth from the grave. And it was later suggested that the remains that he took were thrown from his car as he drove away.
So he went back and just took parts of her.
Yes. Parts that he thought they would be able to identify her with and tie it back to him.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And so he basically...
Also, I just want to point out, you're not a serial killer if it's only two women.
Right.
But Amy, if I guess Amy hadn't gotten away, he would have been if he hadn't been caught.
I feel like that term, yeah, I hate when people say serial killer and it's been like, I mean, it's terrible, like, but don't, like,
well, but I think
glamorize it too, you know?
I think by definition it has to be three or more.
I think so too.
I think he,
onto it there.
It sounds like he probably wanted to be a serial killer. And
I think he would have if he would have never
he
gotten
probably
caught.
Like idolized like Bundy and those types.
Totally. So this is explained, I guess, why only some of the pieces were found.
That makes sense, then.
So there we go. So Brunner also said that Anderson bragged about how he had abducted Piper. He said that he had raped her and strangled her before he threw her body in the Big Sioux River.
Oh, so she could have been taken. Like,
I mean, yeah, she...
I don't know how that
I don't
goes,
know how big that river is and
or like
where it goes
its tributaries
into.
Right. And all those fun things.
So...
But that means...
That gives you kind of more of an answer of that's probably where she went.
That's
like,
why she hasn't been found.
Correct.
But then that makes you wonder if, like, maybe someday down the road, like, a diver or someone. Because, like, my son likes to watch these YouTube videos of the divers who go into, like, lakes and rivers to look for fossils.
Yes.
But they'll also find things
human
like...
things.
Well, yes. But, like, guns and things like that people have tossed.
Totally.
That they have to then call the police for. So it makes you wonder, I think especially in this day and age, with that type of stuff becoming, I feel like, more popular now too, it makes you wonder if maybe I mean, I feel bad for whoever would find, at this point it'd be skeletons, or at least part of it. I hope for her family's sake and her sake that someday someone can find enough for it to be determined that it was her and for her to be given back to her family.
Exactly, because that's awful, and that's now been so long, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, you know, what he said
he did with her body.
So,
can they finally charge him with murder then? Like, because if the other information was correct about where his trophies were hidden.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, during another convo that Anderson had with Bruner, when they were in this 1 week together, he asked Bruner if he would actually murder Walker for him when he got out, because he was worried that he was going to snitch on him. And so Bruner said he agreed. And Anderson drew two maps for him, one of where Walker's house was and the other one where his grandmother's house was, Anderson's grandma. So he told him that his gun was there and that he could use that. So Bruner agreed to kill Walker when he got out, but he said he actually had no intention of following through.
Well, you're rooming with this guy who's just admitted.
Yes!
Even if he's lying, who wants to take that chance? Yeah, dude.
And especially when you're getting ready to, like, you can get out. And you can
get out.
So
he is just doing this out of the kindness of his heart. Yeah, hey, I totally want to help cover for your murder.
Yeah, so let me come back for the rest of my life here and get the death sentence.
Also, what's he going to tell his grandma to get into her house?
I know. That whole thing was weird to me, too. I thought,
hey, I'm a friend of your grandson's. I'm just coming to pick up his gun that he has hidden.
Right. I know. Stupid, right? This just shows how dumb they are. So he had no intention of doing that. Instead, he struck a bargain with the police in exchanging info that he gathered for a shorter prison sentence. So then in September of 1997, Anderson was charged with the murder of Larissa Domanski.
Domanski?
Okay.
I think it's Domanski.
So he was charged with... Oh, and then he was also charged with the rape and murder of Piper.
Okay, good.
Because he only had been charged with kidnapping for her.
Right.
So,
and I get it. He's already in jail, but I don't know.
You just need... It's like just more justice, you know? Yeah. And just to know that... You're
Call
acknowledging
it what it
that
is.
He did it.
Yeah. Like, we clearly know she's not coming back.
Right. So his trial, they had a new trial, obviously, for all those new charges, and it was set to start in March of 99. So once it started, it lasted a month. And so, interesting, Shayna, the little girl, her testimony was never heard. She did not want to testify. But her description of the events that took place on that day were presented to the court. Eyewitnesses, Anderson's friends, and his one-time cellmate, Bruner, also testified. So the evidence against him was overwhelming. There was not a chance he was going to walk away. Well, not that he could, but that he would get away from those charges. So then on April 6th, a jury of 8 men and 8 women quickly returned the verdict, and he was found guilty on all 4 counts, including the rape and murder of Piper and the kidnapping and murder of Larissa. 3 days later, they sentenced him to death by lethal injection. So Walker was tried for his crimes. He pled guilty to the attempted kidnapping of Amy Anderson, accessory to kidnapping and second-degree murder and conspiracy to kidnap Larissa. He received a total of 30 consecutive years behind bars. So then, naturally, Anderson files for every appeal he can.
Of course.
And while the Supreme Court was waiting to meet to discuss his appeals, it turns out he would never hear the result, because on March 30th, he committed suicide. He was not in his death row cell, but he was alone in a segregation cell when he was found hanging by a sheet tied to a bar. He had been put in isolation because he was found in possession of a razor blade. They assumed that he was going to use that for self-harm. 3 months before he had killed himself, his father actually killed himself as well. So his father died from a gunshot to the head. So they think that his father's actions may have been the catalyst that prompted him to take his own life.
I was going to say, at that point, like, I know when you have a death sentence, like, there are some, like, automatic appeals that have to happen before they can do it. Like, you can't even, like, I don't think you can even waive your right to an appeal.
Yeah.
For it, because I know I've listened to some cases where the people are like, can you just put me to death already, please?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go through all this.
Right. Because
but
it's just a waiting game of knowing what's going to happen. So
right.
I think, and they also said that after that was revealed that he had killed himself, the Supreme Court said that they were going to his conviction would have been upheld anyway. He might have known that that was going to get denied anyway, and that's another reason that he took his own life.
I mean, right. There's no way he was going to win any of those appeals.
No. No.
At all.
Nope. So, that is that case.
Okay, so do you want to talk about who it is you reached out to?
So, I actually was, yeah, I reached out to Shayna, the little girl that
who's now witnessed not a little it. Girl.
Yeah, not a little girl, married, moved away, and it looks like Vance remarried as well, and it looks like, I mean, without, you know, going into vivid detail, yes, it looks like I stalked them, but I mean, I just was curious as to how
they moved on.
Yes.
Not and moved on, but like they coped have and
quite the story. I mean, I know that she is in the process of writing a book and about her
experience,
and I can't think of what it's called. It has something to do with the little girl who saw something or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I know, or I had reached out to her in regards to that, and I had kind of read a little bit, and it sounds like they just have a very neat like testimony to their whole case and how they got through all of that. And it's just crazy to me. And I think, I don't know why it felt so close. I think it's just partially because stuff like this happens all the time, but you never think, you know, it's going to happen to you. And I think about me being a child, seeing something like that, or having my child witness something like that, and how horrible and crazy that is.
Yeah.
But how justice, I mean, was served, and how this little girl at 3 years old ultimately was able to provide enough evidence for them to catch to her help. Mother's killer. Yeah. Like, you know? And so I just think it's crazy. And of course, you know, if she ever wanted to talk or, you know, she listens to this at some point, love to talk to her and hear her thoughts on that and how things like that, you know, changed her life. And I mean,
she would be a very interesting person to talk to if she was ever willing, you know, if she ever gets back to you. Because I know Facebook, they throw that into the others folder now.
Right.
And I don't see those things for forever if I get them. So that's, I do, like, as you were talking, I know I watched some show or something about this case a little bit, like details of it were familiar, but not all of it. It must have been one of those things where I was like watching it, but it was like multitasking while I was doing it. Mm-hmm. And because, yeah, parts of that sounded familiar, like with Larissa and her disappearing and them working together. Yeah. And then Amy being on, yeah, there were things about it that just sounded, the floorboard thing for sure, which I know there have been other people too who have done those things, but the fact that it was like hidden under the carpet sounded very familiar to me. But that's just, oh my goodness, I can't get over the fact that, like, one, her poor daughter saw this, and her poor son,
I know,
his mom was taken and, you know, murdered on his birthday.
I know. And you think, like, some kids have more vivid memories of things than others, you know, like, my daughter will say stuff from, she remembers when she was literally, like, 2 or 3, and I'm like, how do you remember that? Stuff that I've never told her, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's other, like, I couldn't tell you anything about a memory of mine until I'm, like, 5, maybe? Like, I don't know.
But I've also read, because I have a hard time, like, with even, like, memories from my teenagers, but I have recently learned that that's, like, a depression anxiety symptom.
Huh. Interesting.
So, is, like, it's something about, like, making those memories and keeping those memories is difficult. I read it somewhere. So I'm like, well, that makes sense as to why I don't remember.
Yeah.
Half
I think
my life, but
I would be curious to see how much Shayna remembers really of that, or like what they've locked out. You know,
that's
what I
something
mean?
If you find, I think that we should, like, since we always do social media posts the day this comes out, if you have something for it that we can mention in there, post on there, you know, not necessarily of her, but of whatever this book is.
Which,
like, if there's a pre-order coming out or something for it.
Yeah, I'll have to look on here. And also, there, while you're talking about the books, I should mention that there are a couple books that have been written about this case. I mean, of course,
I'm sure,
you know.
Yeah.
But we can link those as well for anybody who would want to, you know, read into it more, because I kind of thought about getting them. And even though we've done this case now, I still would be curious to kind of read it. And because, I mean, you know, when we just do one episode on some of these cases, it's hard because there's so much you want to pack in. So it's like you really have to pick apart the things that seem more relevant or more, you know, because it was really hard to focus. Like, I don't like to talk about, you know,
the details of the actual murder,
because it's just, it's sickening, and nobody wants to hear that, their own family. Like, and I, it's like,
no,
you know,
and the thing is, the people who want those details can go and read about themselves.
Yeah, very true.
I don't think there's a need necessarily to rehash it unless there's something within it that requires some sort of you know, like with last week's case, Velma being bludgeoned to death, you know, just with a candlestick. It was one of those things that, like, I had to say that to an extent, but we didn't.
You don't need to. Yeah. Other than that, details. Right. And like when they talked about, you know, her possibly being tortured and stuff like that. It's like,
well, to prove the points of his. Right. Yeah. So that's, I'd be interested to read definitely her story for sure. I think another one, but if she's writing her own story, I would love to see her perspective, because I'm sure she's giving more of how her family then carried on after that.
Right.
So I think that's interesting. That was such a good case. And I think that's one that, again, like, I know I had vaguely heard about, and I'm sure it's one of those things that people, unless they're from around that area, don't really know a whole lot about.
I know. And I had heard this from my family. My uncle's actually a doctor there, and a psychologist. Oh my gosh, I hope that's the right thing. So sorry, Uncle Roy, if you're not listening. No, but he actually debriefed the jury on this case. So I obviously didn't add that all in here, because that's like a whole nother thing.
Right.
But I think that, you know, it's just, it touches so many people, like, in different ways. Like, I think something like that is traumatic. And my aunt actually taught Shayna at one point, and so I know she had heard things about the case through her writing and stuff. And I just think that's stuff you never forget. Like,
no.
And how it affects someone. So I think that's another one, you know, here in the heartland that people, I don't think, hear about, because it is so old. And
being older, and we didn't have the social media then. So.
Yeah, exactly. And so now it's just, I mean, it's crazy to read all these things. And then it's interesting, though, to see how people have, like, moved on. And, I mean, you have to, because you can't just hold on to things.
Piper was only, what, you said, 29?
Yeah.
So
26. Was she 26? Marissa was 29. Hold on. I don't know. Let me look. There's so many of them here. But, I mean, yeah.
Either way, I mean, Vance would have been young then, too. And he's got two young kids that I'm sure you're going to want support.
And Nancy,
another. She was mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's still so young that you can't expect him to not try to find a companion for the rest of his life, too. But my goodness, thanks for telling me about that.
I was trying to keep it not short, but
it's so hard. I feel like maybe one day when we're a little more established and we know we can rely on people coming back for sure,
yes,
then maybe we can go into, like, part twos.
It's just hard because, like, you want to have, you know, the setup of, like, do you want to do victims, crime, you know, this. Yeah. It's hard, but each case is so unique and different that you kind of just have to go with your gut and what
flows right for you. Yeah. So, well, with that, then, you guys, remember, if you can rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast, we're on all the things: Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify. Stitcher's still hit or miss for us, so if you listen to that, I'm sorry, I'm working on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, anywhere that you listen to, we're pretty much everywhere of the popular places to listen to podcasts. So if you can rate and review, we greatly appreciate it.
Follow us on socials and invite your friends and family that you think would be interested.
Because
I think the more we branch out to it, we're going to want to get more cases from people that
And like, that's the other thing too. Like, if you guys have cases that you know about, you want to hear about, suggestions, email us at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com. I always link that, our Instagram, our Facebook, and our Twitter, in the podcast show notes as well. So you can always follow us. But we are at heartland.darklandpodcast for Instagram. We're at heartland.darklandpodcast on Facebook. And we're at DL podcast for Twitter. But yeah, like, email us if you guys have anything for yourself. And again, as we said, I know so far it's just true crime that we've done, but we are also looking at the paranormal as well. I think just so much true crime. I mean, you have the afterlife with it. It just kind of goes hand in hand. But also, kind of on the outskirts, is also if you have any sort of, like, local folklore legend that you find really interesting, or from somewhere that you know isn't really popular, let us know. Like, we want all the suggestions. We'd love to hear from you guys. So please don't hesitate to email us or reach out to us on one of our social medias. You can message us. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Yeah.
But with that, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.